Prologue, a tip-off in a pub, 2013. Herald Sun crime reporter Anthony Dalsley doesn't like beer, but he drinks it anyway. He has to. Contacts in his blokey realm would query his credibility if he didn't. He's shouting rounds of beer at a South Melbourne pub when he gets a tip-off about the greatest legal scandal in Australian history. The Palmerston Hotel is a friendly place where the Palmy at the Palmy is an institution. The pub draws Victorian police officers from both elite squads and nearby stations. The afternoon sun streaks across the TAB TV screens as dozens of detectives gather in the Christmas haze of 2013 to swap war stories about blood and bastards. Dowsley's chameleon charms are marked by sartorial indifference. He sports a buzz cut and wears crinkled clothes. He could be just another cop who finds criminals easier to negotiate than ironing boards. He's in his 40s, and masks anxiety about his volatile waist measurement with self-deprecating lightness. People tend to open up in response to his easy curiosity, which explains both his familiarity with newspaper office gossip and his knack for landing scoops. Dowsley and his Herald Sun colleague, feature writer Patrick Carlyon, have written many stories together. They are united by a 1990s suburban newspaper editor who long ago declared that neither of them would amount to much. Let's call her Shirley. Back then, Carlyon sported an earring and Dowsley hair to his waist, memories neither cherishes. Both suffered as whipping boys under Shirley's tutelage, and both figured at the time that Shirley was probably right. At the Herald Sun, theirs is a hunter-gatherer union, which they hope transcends the office chatter about how Dowsley needs an editor and Carlyon should remove his head from his behind. Dowsley recently got a tip-off that the DNA of serial rapist and killer Adrian Bailey was not stored on a national database. It should have been. Bailey committed numerous rapes in the 1990s and early 2000s. Bailey's DNA sample was not in the system on the day in 2012 when he killed Irish ABC worker Jill Maher in a Melbourne laneway. Police had botched its inclusion in the database in an administrative oversight that could have cost Maher her life. Dowsley dragged Carlyon to meet sex workers raped by Bailey. Carlyon gave out cigarettes to ease the victims back to the moment they thought they would die in the back of a van. The pair wrote a series of stories detailing the Bailey monster and the justice system that freed him to return to the hunt. The Maher tragedy has been Dowsley's biggest story until now. Won him an award. Yet after 9 years at the Herald Sun, Dowsley feels like he's surrounded by reporters with higher profiles, like he's a Toyota who wants to be a Porsche. His newspaper investigations have located a pedophile hidden by the state government near a school and triggered a cold case murder charge. But he's still waiting for the career-changing breakthrough. He doesn't know it as he identifies friends and foes amid the hubbub of the Palmerston, but tonight he'll finally get that opportunity. The next 6 years of his professional life are about to be framed. An ex-elite squad officer approaches Dowsley. They know each other well. The reporter suddenly finds he is answering rather than asking questions. "Can you get birth certificates?" the officer asks. "No," Dowsley replies. "Why?" The ex-detective passes on a rumour about criminal barrister Nicola Gobbo, well known for her peroxide hair and plunging necklines. She's recently given birth to a daughter. The gossip says the girl's father is a former assistant police commissioner called Jeff Pope. "Prove it," the officer challenges. "Get the piece of paper." This detective is not the only one spreading stories. The evening drinks spill over into another bar, where Dowsley hears how Pope dropped out of Victoria Police 6 months ago without the fanfare normally reserved for someone of his rank. Pope has become well known in police circles since his recent review of the force's covert operations, including the acutely sensitive Source Development Unit, SDU, responsible for high-risk police informers. When he recommended the shutdown of the SDU in February, he hadn't spoken to the unit's head before dispatching him and his men into irrelevance. The gathering buzzes with speculations about Gobbo, Pope, and naughty sex. The rumor galvanizes those who view Pope as an enemy. Pope must have fathered the child of the gangland lawyer, the thinking goes, because Pope's detractors want to believe it. Yet the claim doesn't sound convincing to Dowsley. The tip-off leading to the biggest story of Dowsley's career will prove, in fact, to be wrong. He doesn't know Pope, but he wonders if the sex rumor has been muddled up with the anger at Pope's decision to close the SDU. Dowsley is wary of sex scandals. When he last wrote a story on the topic, a sports manager threatened to hurt him. But the inclusion of Gobbo's name? This intrigues him greatly. Gobbo represented many of the biggest figures in the drug turf wars, popularly known as gangland, that gripped Melbourne between 1999 and 2010. Dowsley already knows Gobbo can be fearsome. He once called Mick Gatto, then leader of the so-called Carlton crew, about a gangland story he was writing. Instead of Gatto, Dowsley got Gobbo. "Do not associate Mr. Gatto with gangland," Gobbo declared, spitting out her flat vowels with a venom that prompted her client, sitting next to her, to calm her down. Gobbo doesn't slot into the usual conventions of lawyers, cops, and criminals. Everyone seems to know a Gobbo story, and almost everyone seems to lack 9/10 of the full drama. Dowsley has heard that Gobbo walked into police headquarters a couple of years ago and announced that she had once had a relationship with Pope. Tonight's love child element is a fresh take on a long-standing story. He leaves the Christmas drinks serenaded by police entreaties. "Go on, do your job, find out who the father is." But his journalistic antenna tells him the story is behind the story. He comes into work late the next morning, too dusty for the gym. He chats with a friend, defence solicitor Rob Starry, about the love child business. Starry knows every criminal lawyer in Melbourne, and Gobbo has been on his mind. For some time, he has been wondering about certain courtroom events. In 2008, Gobbo wore a hidden police wire to record a conversation with former police detective Paul Dale. Her evidence was later critical to cases brought against Dale for lying to the Australian Crime Commission and for murder. It was odd, almost unprecedented, for a defence lawyer to wear a wire to snag a suspect. Stranger still was how Gobbo was dropped from the witness list for Dale's lying case after she received a death threat. "Justice is blind," Starry argues. "Police don't usually withdraw a witness just because they are threatened." Starry doesn't know Gobbo well and was never inclined to brief her as a barrister. But two of his former clients were close to her, and they wound up dead. He's intrigued by the possible link Dowsley has now uncovered between Gobbo and the closing of the SDU. The SDU handled the highest-risk informers, whose identities had to be protected. Dowsley wonders at the links between Pope and Gobbo and the extraordinary efforts of police to protect a criminal barrister. "Something's going on here," Starry tells him. "It doesn't feel right." Dowsley has the first inkling of an unthinkable idea. It undercuts every ethical tenet that lawyers are bound to uphold. But it couldn't be right, surely. Was Gobbo a defence lawyer and a police informer? Dowsley has been handed a jigsaw piece, the first of thousands. If he knew how many more were to be coaxed, begged, and wheedled out of countless sources in coming years, he may have resigned then and there and returned to his first job in a plastic bag factory. Dowsley visits dozens of contacts in the following weeks, police and otherwise. He gets a thumbs up here, a denial there, No one wants to talk openly about Gobbo. Dowsley's theory bobbles and yaws, like a little boat confronting a big iceberg. He thinks of what happened to the Titanic. He perseveres. One Sunday in March 2014, he calls his boss, Herald Sun editor Damon Johnston. Enjoying a rare day off, Johnston is at the park with his daughter, watching her ride on the swings. "I've got a yarn," Dowsley says, with typical understatement, as he painstakingly explains how gangland history needs to be rewritten to include its biggest secret. Phoebe Johnson wonders why her father is no longer pushing her back and forth. "They won't like it," Johnston says. Victoria Police's media arm is well drilled in shutting down unfavourable news. But neither Johnston nor Dowsley has anticipated the police's response to the revelation that the police have cheated the courts and the cornerstones of justice. 6 years and tens of millions of dollars later, authorities still resist what Dowsley has uncovered. He has enlisted Carlyon and Johnston and countless others. He wants to finish his quest, then go on a holiday far from Carlyon. A royal commission hears extraordinary suggestions that Victoria Police broke the law, that some of Melbourne's worst ever criminals are victims, that the state's law enforcers care so little about the public's right to know that they are still seeking to suppress their scandalous use of Nicola Gobbo. We know all this for only one reason, because a chronically underdressed journalist braced himself for another round at the pub and was told a secret he was not meant to hear. Dowsley's investigation has led him to police stations, law offices, courtrooms, and, yes, more beer drinking sessions, and to this book too, which Victoria Police would prefer you do not read.